ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Text 45. Sa Ayam Dipa Archisham Yadvat Srotasam Tat Idam Jalam Sa Ayam Puman Iti Ninam Misha Gi Di Mrisha Ayusham So Yam Dipo Chisam Yadvat Srotasam Tadidam Jalam So Yam Pumaniti Ninam Mrisha Gir Dear Mrisha Ayusham Soyam dipor chisam yadvat
Soyam dipor chisam yadvat
Shotasam tadidam jalam
Shotasam tadidam jalam
Soyam bhumanati ninam
Soyam bhumanati ninam
Mishagir dir mishayusham
Mishagir dir mishayusham
Soyam dipor chisam yadvat
Soyam dipor chisam yadvat
Srotasam tadidam jalam
Srotasam tadidam jalam
Soyam bhumanati ninam
Soyam bhumanati ninam
Mrisha gir dhir mrisha yusham
Mrisha gir dhir mrisha yusham
Soyam dipo archisham yadvat
Soyam dipo archisham yadvat
Srotasam tadidam jalam
Srotasam tadidam jalam
Soyam bhumanati ninam
Deepa,
light,
Archisham, of the radiation of a lamp.
Yadvat,
just as Srotasam,
of the currents flowing in a river.
Tat, that. Idam,
the same.
Jalam, water.
Sa,
this.
Ayam,
the same.
Puman,
person.
Iti,
thus.
Ninam,
of men.
Misha,
false.
Gi,
statement.
Di,
thought. Misha
ayusam,
of those who are wasting their life. Translation: although the illumination of a lamp consists of innumerable rays of light undergoing constant creation, transformation, and destruction, a person with illusory intelligence who sees the light for a moment will speak falsely, saying, "This is the light of the lamp." As one observes a flowing river, ever new water passes by and goes far away, yet a foolish person observing one point in the river falsely states, "This is the water of the river." Similarly, although the material body of a human being is constantly undergoing transformation, those who are simply wasting their lives falsely think and say that each particular stage of the body is the person's real identity. Purport: although one may say, "This is the light of the lamp," there are innumerable rays of light being created, transformed, and destroyed at every moment. And although one may speak of the water of the river, there is an ever new supply of different water molecules passing by. Similarly, when one meets a young child, one accepts that particular transitory phase of the body as the actual identity of the person, considering him to be a child. One also considers an old body to be an old person. In fact, however, the material body of a human being, just like the waves of a river or the radiation of a lamp, is merely a transformation of the three modes of material nature, the potency of the Supreme Lord. The real identity of a person is spirit soul, part and parcel of Lord Krishna, but as Lord Krishna proves in this verse, a conditioned soul is capable of observing or understanding the subtle movements of time. With the gross vision of material consciousness, one cannot ascertain the subtle segments of material manifestation, which are impelled by the Lord Himself as time. The word mishayusham in this verse indicates those who are usually wasting their time in ignorance without understanding the instructions of the Lord. Such persons gullibly accept any particular phase of the body to be the actual identity of the spirit soul within the body. Because the spirit soul is not subject to material transformation, when he engages himself in the eternal variegated pleasure of Krishna consciousness, loving service to the Supreme Lord, he will experience no further ignorance and suffering. Although the illumination of a lamp consists of innumerable rays of light undergoing constant creation, transformation, and destruction, a person with illusory intelligence who sees the light for a moment will speak falsely, saying, "This is the light of the lamp." As one observes a flowing river, ever new water passes by and goes far away, yet a foolish person observing one point in the river falsely states, "This is the water of the river." Similarly, although the material body of a human being is constantly undergoing transformation, those who are simply wasting their lives falsely think and say that each particular stage of the body is the person's real identity. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unmuditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Angum Gangayate Girin Yatkripatamaham Bande Shri Guru Mataram Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shanyavadi Pastachari Satanade Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasini Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Evacha Patitana Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Before I begin speaking, I have to confess this is the first class I've given in continuous English, so be prepared. I spend most of my life in foreign countries and speak in fragments. My mind is adjusted to fragmental speaking. I'm a fragmented state of mind. This will be my first attempt in months speaking continuously. Bear with me. So here, Krishna is giving an analogy about the perception that a person with illusory intelligence has when he experiences this material world. The illusory intelligence, of course, is conditioned intelligence. And the living entity who is captivated by the three modes of material nature and bound by the influence of time, he perceives reality to that which he experiences with his sense perception, as we know, which is gross sense perception. Real sense perception is what Brahma describes as when one's eyes are anointed with the love of Godhead, one will see Krishna everywhere. This is real sense perception, to see everything, to see Krishna constantly and to see everything constantly connected to Him. Conditioned sense perception means to see, to accept this material world as reality. The example Lord Krishna is using is like that of light. He says that the light is constantly undergoing creation, transformation, and destruction. But a person with illusory intelligence who sees the light for a moment will falsely say, "This is the light of the lamp," although he's only perceiving a momentary flash of a moment. But it's constantly changing. Krishna also uses the example of the waves of the river, how the river is continuously flowing, and one may look and say, "This is the river," but as soon as one says, "This is the river," and points to the river, it's not there anymore. it's already changed. The river has moved on, and that which he's pointed to is already something different, and if he tries to hold it and capture it and experience it, it will continue to move. Such is the nature of time. In the material world, the living entity who is under the influence of the Kalarupa, the time factor, his experience of this world is that which is always going through constant change, as Krishna says, what is it, Adi Bhutamya, what's that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Krishna says, material nature is endlessly mutable. That's the old translation. I forget what the new translation is, forgive me. I always remember the old translations of Bhagavad Gita. I memorized Bhagavad Gita verses in 1972. They're still there. So when I have to quote them, I think endless immutable has been changed. Such is the nature of this world. I think it now says constantly changing, but in 1972 it said endlessly mutable. More evidence. So that's the nature of this world. It's always changing. And for the living entity who's under the influence of this material world, he has no experience of transcendent reality. His experience is that of the ever-changing of nature of this world. We often use the analogy also given here in the 11th canto, which describes conditioned intelligence. This verse speaks about illusory intelligence. It's the same. Illusory intelligence is conditioned intelligence. It's a verse spoken in the second canto that although the duality of this material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul experiences it real under the influence of his conditioned intelligence. And he says this imaginary experience of a world which is separate from Krishna. First, we should see, and without the influence of conditioned intelligence, nothing is separate from Krishna. But due to conditioned intelligence, we see everything separate from Krishna. So the verse says, this imaginary experience of a world separate from Krishna can be compared to the acts of dreaming and desiring. When a conditioned soul dreams of something desirable or horrible, or when he daydreams of something he would like to have or something he would like to avoid, he creates a reality which has no existence beyond his own imagination. So the first part of this verse describes conditioned intelligence. The second part of the verse describes transcendental intelligence. He says that an intelligent person should restrict the mind from seeing things separate from Krishna. And when the mind is thus controlled, then one will actually be able to experience a state of complete fearlessness. So conditioned intelligence is described as this happiness and distress that is due to the dualities of this world. But the dualities of this world don't exist. They're temporary. And that's what this verse is explaining. It's just like dreaming. Every person has experienced a dream, and the analogy that is given of good dreams, if we have a good dream, we're happy. When we wake up, we're sad. When we have a bad dream, we're frightened, we're sad. We wake up, we're happy. But the happiness outside the dream has no existence beyond our own imagination, because the happiness and distress is only connected to a dream. It has no connection to reality. Connected to a dream. This happens practically every night. We have a dream, whether it be bad or good. We wake up either happy or distressed from the dream. Because if it's a good dream, we're distressed. Oh, it's a dream. But that's the night dream, and then there's the daydream. When we dream of something we would like to have or something that we would like to avoid, we have the night dream and then we have the daydream. Something we, I'm very happy, anticipation of the fulfillment of my dream. When we get it, it may not necessarily be the complete fulfillment we were expecting. Or we daydream of something we'd like to avoid and we think, yet, I was able to get away from that one. Right? I'm happy. Like everybody's trying to avoid disease. And we tried and successfully treat the disease and the disease has been treated, then we think, I'm happy. But actually this transformation is constantly taking place in the material body. It's constant transformation. Even the molecules of the body are constantly transforming and changing. What is it, every 7 years, the scientists say, one has a completely new body? The molecules have changed. So, conditioned intelligence is the perception of the realities of this world in relationship to illusion, matter. Just like the reality. We look at the river, that is the river. It's already moved, it's not the river. This is my son. We heard it last night. Chittakretu Maharaj, his ecstasy. Although he was warned by Angira Muni, his name will be Harshashoka. He was thinking, Harshashoka, maybe he'll be a little naughty. Maybe that will be the Shoka. Harsha. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what is it? Shoka Shatanam? This beautiful prayer, Bhaktivinoda. How to dispel the lamentation of illusion in relationship to the story of Shivas Thakur's son who departed from this world. Everybody was in great lamentation. And they were trying to avoid Shivas Thakur. Told everyone who was present at the house of the time during nocturnal kirtan with Lord Chaitanya present, don't show your lamentation to the Lord. If he experiences your, sees your, or even in any way understands there's some lamentation, his ecstasy will be destroyed. Fools, stop your lamentation. And then he went back and entered the kirtan. So the lamentation was looking at the son of Shivas Thakur. This is son, relative. But the lamentation was dispelled when Lord Chaitanya gradually, after I think it was 7 hours, when he anticipated there's something happening here, what is it? And then the confession was made that Shivas Thakur's son departed from this world 7 hours ago. And then Lord Chaitanya went into the room, saw the departed son, and then asked him, why did you leave? The son appeared back in his body momentarily, a brief period of time, appeared back in the body and dispelled the lamentation, presented the reality. I mean, who was my father? Who was my mother? I'm simply in this world for some brief period of time. Then gives different examples of how time passes. Actually, he describes the nature of the soul and how he had come and appeared in this world for some time. He had, by great fortune, he was present in the presence of the Lord. And then he folded his hands and said, please give me now your permission to depart. And he left. By speaking those words, lamentation was dispelled by all those, to all those who were present. Same happened with Harshashoka. Chittaketu has experienced great jubilation. And then his jubilation disappeared when he was impacted with the realization that my son is no longer present. Son. Prabhupada, even in one of those commentaries, can't remember exactly how he worded it, but he alluded to the possibility that possibly that Harshashoka could have been an enemy in a previous life. And came back to seek his revenge. That's why we oftentimes use the verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nahyashita Hichidrajan Puma Veda Vihitsatam Yadvichigasya Muyanti Kaviyopihi, where it's described that devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they're cheated, cursed, neglected, insulted, disturbed, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. So someone may say, well, how's a person killed going to avenge himself? So, anyways, that such was Chittaketu Maharaj's deep lamentation when he said, my son, experience is gone. But then it was Narada Muni, I think, who came back and asked the son to return, and spoke his few words of transcendental realization, dispelled the illusion of Chittaketu Maharaj. So the illusion is accept something temporary to be real. That is the illusion. The illusion is to accept something temporary. Of course, we understand that which is temporary is real, but the illusion is that it's only manifest for some time and then it's unmanifest for some time. Because ultimately, all Krishna's energy is always real. Brahma Satcham Jagam Mithya. So, it's interesting when discussing the nature of this illusory intelligence, we should understand that it is due to the influence of the time factor, because due to the influence of the time factor, as we said, everything is changing in this world. There's birth, growth, duration, production of byproduct, dwindle, vanishes. Such is the nature of this world. And I oftentimes reflect, here's one verse, not verse, it's from Sri Bhakti Loka, I wanted to read it. It talks about this time factor and talks about those who are under the influence of this time factor, how they'll always be bewildered when they're trying to determine. I'm afraid to say it. I'll read it first. You'll see why I'm afraid to say it. Bhaktivinoda Thakura and Bhakti Loka says, well, considering the fourth reality, the Amnaya says that the living entities are minute particles of the spiritual sun, Krishna, and they are innumerable. As the spiritual world is manifested by Krishna's chit, or spiritual potency, and as the material world is manifested by the inferior illusory energy, similarly, the living entities are manifested by a portion of the spiritual energy. Vishnu Shakta Para Prakta Kshetra Gatkita Para Vijikama Samyana Tritiya Shakti Ishite. Potencies of the Supreme Lord are summarized in three categories. There's the superior energy, which is full of knowledge. There's the material energy, which is it's the living entity who, although belongs to the spiritual energy, he can come under the influence of the third energy, which is the material energy, which is ignorance and visible and fruitive activities. So he's describing the primary potencies of the Lord. And then he says, Krishna's spiritual form has all qualities in full, and those qualities are naturally present in the living entities in minute quantity. The independent nature of Krishna is found insignificantly in the living entities. So just as Krishna is Svarat, living entities are also minutely independent because the qualities are the same. These things we all understand. We've heard them many times before. For this reason, the living entities claim to be independent. As a result, all living entities have developed different propensities. By one propensity, the living entity searches for his own happiness. By another propensity, he searches for Krishna's happiness. The living entities are divided into two groups: those searching for their own happiness and those searching for Krishna's happiness. Those who search for Krishna's happiness are called Nityamukta, and those who search for their own happiness are called Nityabhadam. The time factor of the spiritual nature is a state of eternal present. It's a nature of the spiritual world, eternal present. We can talk a little bit about that eternal presence, but we know that the nature of the spiritual world, that time is conspicuous by its absence. There's no destructive feature of time, although that's the absence of the time factor in the spiritual world. No destructive feature, but there's time. But time is there to serve Krishna's pastimes. Krishna goes out in the morning, pasturing ground. Gopis feel great separation. Krishna, please don't go, even a moment of not seeing you causes us great pain. A moment, time, don't go, please, don't throw us into that separation. Time. Even the gopis, when Krishna was leaving, when he was going to Mathura, the gopis were saying how we cannot tolerate when you go out to the pasturing grounds. Please, that is so difficult. Even every day when you go to the pasturing grounds, we're thrown into an ocean of great separation. But if you leave us and go to Mathura, how will we live? It'll be a long time. Too long. Time. Time is there. Time is serving Krishna's pastimes. So that is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here. He's saying the time factor of the spiritual nature is a state of eternal present. We'll go on to explain that. But in the inferior illusory energy, there are three states of existence. Everyone knows. Past, present, future. So whatever considerations arise in this regard, if related to the spiritual time factor, then no doubts remain. But if seen otherwise, then doubts will remain. Why did a pure spirit soul search for his own happiness? Like the first question we ask is, when? When? Why? Because there's two. Those seeking Krishna's happiness, those seeking their own happiness. When? Why? Why did the pure spirit soul search for his own happiness? If one puts forward such a question, then doubts arising from the material time factor will manifest. Excuse me. If one can give up such doubts, then he can perform devotional service. Otherwise, there will only be a series of arguments. If arguments... Something here blocking my vision and I can't get it out of the way. Let me see if I can get it out of the way. Now, if arguments are related to the inconceivable nature, then anarthas will arise. So he's explaining that as long as we're under this material time factor and we see things in relationship to beginning and we'll be in the world of duality. In fact, there are some very nice verses, a few verses, described Krishna to Narada Muni. When Narada Muni was engaged in deep meditation, and then the Lord appeared momentarily before Narada. And Narada, when he saw the Lord, he experienced great ecstasy, perceiving the presence of that same Lord upon whom he was meditating in his heart. And then the Lord said, "Don't already regret that this is the last time you're going to see me in this life. Because the more that you hanker for me, the more that whatever residual attachments are there in your heart will be washed away." And he said, next verse, he says, "By service of the Absolute Truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. Consequently, he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world after giving up the present deplorable material worlds." And then he says, "Intelligence engaged in my devotion cannot be thwarted at any time. Even at the time of creation, as well as the time of annihilation, your remembrance will continue by my mercy." So here the Lord is revealing to Narada, because as we know, Narada, the Lord says, "You won't see me." Then Narada entered into the body of Lord Brahma. And then at the next Brahma Kalpa, when Lord Brahma appeared, Narada appeared. And remembrance of the Lord was not thwarted by creation and annihilation. His remembrance was fixed. He said, "Intelligence engaged in my devotional service, one very quickly will come. By his fixed and firm intelligence in me, he goes on to become my associate, the transcendental world." Such is the nature of the material world, where creation, maintenance, and annihilation takes place, the living entity. And in fact, in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, the whole description of creation is described by Brahma to Narada. He says, first thing is Karana Daksha Vishnu manifests the Mahatattva, and then time. It's next. Because without time, how can creation happen? Time has to come first. So material time is that time which allows or facilitates creation, facilitates the maintenance of this world and the ever-changing nature of this world, and facilitates the destruction of this world. But in the spiritual world, no such destructive features, no such creative, there's no creation. Krishna says the supreme abode of mine is unmanifest and infallible. It's the supreme destination. When one goes there, one never has to come back. It's unmanifest. It's eternally manifest. Never was it a time. Krishna says, "Natri vaham jatum nasam natri meni janadipa." Never was there a time when I did not exist, Arjuna. Never was there a time when you did not exist. Never was there a time when all these kings present on the battlefield did not exist. Nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Such is the nature of spiritual reality, transcendental reality. That there's no destructive feature, and there's no forgetfulness. No forgetfulness. I was just yesterday, I was just reading in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I was reading Sarupa's narration to the Mathura Brahman. Sarupa was the name of Hare Krishna. Name. Someone help me. I just. Mataksmitigyanamapohanamcha. Gopakumar. And he was describing to the mature Brahman, who later became revealed as being Janashama. But he was describing to the mature Brahman the nature of the spiritual world. And he was describing how Krishna was preparing, Akura had come. When Akura had come to take Krishna to Mathura, word went out, everyone already was experiencing great lamentation, separation. Krishna's going to be leaving. And then when Krishna saw the great lamentation the gopis were experiencing, he said, "Don't worry, Kamsa, Kamsa's very weak, and I'll dispose of him very quickly. And I'll be back in a flash." He assured them. I'll dispose of him very quickly. It won't take long. And I'll be back. And then, of course, Sarupa then is describing how Nanda Maharaj is going with Krishna, and he's assuring Mother Jasoda, who is also anticipating Krishna leaving, he's saying, "Don't worry, I'll go. It won't take very long. We're just going to free Vasudeva and Devaki from the prison house. And when that's been prison, when that's taken care of, we'll come back, and I won't come back. Surely I won't come back without Krishna." Mother Jasoda was temporarily alleviated. And Sarupa is describing this whole scenario to the mature Brahman. And then, of course, he describes the scenario. Then when Krishna is leaving and Akura is taking, and Akura looks at Krishna, anticipates that even Krishna is going to faint, lose consciousness because he's leaving. Those are very dear to him. So he gives some support to Krishna and helps him as he drives him away. They're all experiencing great lamentation. Time seems to be not on their side. And then when Krishna comes to Mathura and everything has been taken care of, Kamsa has been disposed of, Vasudeva Devaki been released from the prison house, and then Nanda Maharaj is saying, "Okay, it's time for us to go back." And then Vasudeva says, "No, there's still more things that need to be taken care of. You have to satisfy all the residents here. And not only that, but you have to take initiation in another place, and you have to take care of these things first. You can't go yet." And Nanda Maharaj is being thrown, and how will I go back? How is it possible? And then when Nanda Maharaj perceived that Krishna was somewhat convinced by Vasudeva's statements, then Nanda Maharaj realized, "I'm going to have to go back." And Nanda Maharaj goes back without Krishna, and then when everybody, all the gopis and cowherd boys are there and waiting for Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj comes back, he's in great tears, so much anxiety, he doesn't want to see anybody. He immediately goes home, throws his head in his pillow, starts crying. This is all narrated by Sarupa to the Mathura Brahman. And then Sarupa goes on and explains something very wonderful about the nature of the spiritual world. And he says that I have it here. Oh yes. He said, "Impelled by compassion for the residents of Raj, Krishna, the crest jewel of artful heroes, quickly gave them back their lives." This is when Krishna comes back. Finally, he comes back again. Gives them back their lives. "He enjoyed with them until they forgot their misery and what had caused it. And if any Vajavasis ever remembered that suffering, they would bitterly lament and cry out in fear, what a horrible, unheard of thing I saw in my dream. That's all they're thinking. It was a dream. Bad dream. The fullness of Krishna's sweet cowherd pastime so utterly attracted and enchanted the Vrajavasi's senses that after a time, they forgot everything. Even that there was a past or future. Oh friend, on another occasion, that same Akura came to Vraj on his chariot as if he had never come before. He once again took away the life of Vraj, and its residents went again into the same state. Again Krishna went to Madhupuri. Again? Killed Kunks? And again returned to Vraj, where he continued as before to enjoy his pastimes. Thus Krishna, again and again, goes to Kunks' city as he did many times before. And again returns to sport in Vraj. Krishna subdues Kaliya time and again. In the same way, and time and again, lifts Govardhan Hill. And again, and yet again, he performs many other wonderful pastimes. Thus the Lord enchants the hearts of his devotees. And the purport. Since all of Krishna's pastimes, beginning with the killing of Putana, are eternal, Krishna enjoys them with his devotees in Goloka as often as they like. Yet each time a pastime is repeated, seems completely new, as if never seen or heard before. Ever fresh, eternally present. This description may confuse us. How can Krishna replay pastimes he has already performed? How can demons like Putana repeatedly be killed? But Krishna's pastimes are transcendental. They are unlimitedly attractive to all his devotees. Whether eternal companions or new converts to pure devotional service, even newly elevated devotees feel extraordinary love for the Supreme Person whenever they hear and remember his pastimes. Those pastimes generate such a force of loving attraction as to fix the memories of them in the hearts of the devotees. Meditation on those pastimes then gives rise to a very special happiness. In this way, Krishna's pastimes steal the hearts of even neophyte devotees, and Krishna's eternal devotees taste a sweetness and wonder unknown to anyone else. And then the next verse, Sarupa says, but the residents of Vraj, completely bewildered by the Kalakuta poison of their supreme love for Sri Krishna, never think that any of these events has ever occurred before. Thus the powerful force of their obsessive love ever increasingly grows both in union and in separation. As true as this is for eternal residents of Braj, even newcomers like me can hardly remember those past events. And then he goes on to explain how even Krishna is influenced by the power of the love of the Vrajagopis and the residents of Vrindavan. Actually, I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this mugda, or bewilderment of the Lord in Radharatma Chandrika. And he says that how that the love for the Lord of the residents of Vraj is so deep that Krishna becomes bewildered by their love. And he gives an analogy. It's like when a bee enters into a lotus flower, and at night it closes. It becomes covered by the lotus flower. But he doesn't care, because there's so much nectar in that lotus flower. So he says in the same way, Krishna becomes bewildered, covered by the love of his devotees, and he even forgets, becomes mugna, forgets he's God, forgets what's going to happen next, forgets. Such is the power of their love. And these are eternal, ever fresh pastimes where Brahma reveals to Narada Muni that, yes, or no, where Krishna revealed, excuse me, to Narada Muni, you'll become my associate. Destruction, creation, annihilation will have no influence. Your memory of me, your constant meditation on me, will not be hampered in any way. Such is the powerful effect of Krishna consciousness. Such is the powerful effect of Krishna consciousness. In the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, it's described by Narada Muni to King Prachandi Maharajat, and in a place where pure devotees sit discussing the pastimes of the Lord, in that place, if one gets to hear the river, flow of nectar, which is coming from the mouths of these devotees, when one gets caught up in that flow of nectar, then one will forget about hunger, thirst, lamentation, and fear. These things will all go away. He'll transcend the dualities of this world simply by remembering Krishna. That is the difference between our experience of this world and our experience of the spiritual world, which of course can only be experienced for us by hearing about it. Right? But if we hear, Naham tishtami vaikunti yogi nam hirdi yeshuva tatak tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. He said, oh Narada, I'm not in the Vaikuntha planets, nor am I in the hearts of yogis. But I'm in that place where my devotees always discuss my glories. I go there. Very eager to be there. We get an opportunity to remember, to be with Krishna, and to transcend our false identification of this illusory material world, which we constantly have to face one day to the next, in forgetfulness of Krishna. Therefore, devotees, even in their prayers to the Lord, upon coming into the darshan of the Lord, we see in so many examples in the Bhagavatam, when upon obtaining darshan of the Lord, how does a devotee pray? Oh Lord, please give me the association of your devotees. Because otherwise, it's so easy to forget you. But in the association of devotees who are always speaking about you, it's impossible to forget you. You pray this way. That is how to transcend the dualities of this material world. Madashriya katamrishta shunvanti katayanti cha. Engaged constantly in hearing and chanting about me, sadhus don't suffer from material miseries because they're always filled with thoughts of my activities and pastimes in this world. Tayitit sadavasadi sava sangha vivajita. Oh my mother, oh virtuous lady, seek out the association of such devotees. Become attached to hearing from them. It will counteract all the pernicious effects of material attachments. Such is the power of Krishna's pastimes. Such is the power of remembering Krishna. This is our hope for transcending this material world with all its dualities, with all the suffering and anxieties. Otherwise, what hope do we have? We should pray for overcoming our conditioned illusory intelligence and use our spiritual intelligence as described in today's verse. Spiritual intelligence is described as the word mishayusham in this verse indicates those who are uselessly wasting their time. What is that verse? Ayahariti vaipungsam hujanyastin chedarasad. Both by rising and setting, the sun decreases the duration of life for everyone, except for one who utilizes the time for discussing the pastimes of the all good personality of Godhead. Don't waste time. The word mishayusham in this verse indicates those who are uselessly wasting their time in ignorance without understanding the instructions of the Lord. Such persons gullibly accept any particular phase of the body to be the actual identity of the spirit soul within the body. Because the spirit soul is not subject to material transformation, when he engages himself in the eternal variegated pleasure of Krishna consciousness, loving service to the Supreme Lord, he will experience no further ignorance and suffering. Thank you. I have to end here. Please forgive me. I have no time for questions. I have to fly to New York tonight, and I have a lot of things I have to do between now and the Dharma Festival, which I want to be at. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I'll go to the